The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, a somewhat gentle introduction to our pre-season preview series last week. But our patrons have come correct with some hard-hitting questions on the quintet we're set to discuss on this pod. No question.
Yeah, I guess it was a little gentle, unless you were a fan of the Kyushu team when we kind of took them to the cleaners last week. So hopefully we'll be a little bit more positive here, and Sendai fans, whoever, Reds fans and everyone else, they might be a little happier with what we're going to say, but no promises for Sendai fans.
All right, and so on this episode, we have some sleeping giants looking to reclaim past glories, and, we have some never-have-beens who are trying to take that final step. So we'll be working our way down Honshu, beginning with Sendai and Kashima. Then Ryan Steele will join us to chat about Urawa. A lot of questions from our patrons on Reds. Before we finish, by running the rule over Kashiwa and FC Tokyo. And if I forget to do so at the end of the episode, a big thanks to Thomas Pennington, Gabrielle Anello, Johnny Nickel, Andrew Schmidt, Naoya Kanai, and Ralph, a.k.a. Kakichino 11, and not to mention Charlotte Patterson, whose timing was indeed immaculate. She got a question in about 5 minutes before we started our Skype call on Monday evening. So, thanks to you all for your questions, and we'll get to them in this episode. And didn't even need to put the feelers out on Twitter, Sam, with all of these all the goodness we've gotten from our patrons.
Yeah, messages were flying in from you to me with loads of questions, all like completely different range of subjects. So thank you very much for all the engagement. We got a lot, I thought, at the end of after the podcast last week, which was great to see. And the questions have been fantastic for this episode.
All right, so we will begin up north with Vegalta Sendai, for whom Makoto Tegaramori returns to the dugout. He spent almost six full seasons with Vegalta in his first stint. He took them out of J2 and to the top, almost to the top of J1. They finished fourth in 2011 and then magically second in 2012, but they plummeted to 13th the following year, and Tegaramori was sacked in November. Since then, their best finish is 11th in both 2018 and 2019. But had there been relegation last year, they would have gone down, as they finished 17th, having spent about 10 weeks late on in the season at the foot of the table. Sam, Tegaramori, I guess it's the $64,000 question, isn't it? And it's one that Ralph has posed to us. Basically, can Tegaramori save Vegalta? Can he push them back up the table?
Well, I mean, historically he's had good success at Sendai, as you just said there, but looking at this squad, it's going to be very difficult for him. He's definitely maybe got the style of player that's not necessarily as exciting as you might want, but it might be kind of what is needed to get out of a relegation battle. And he's kept certain players that they're going to be important to Sendai. Slovic is still there. Shimamate is still there. So maybe you've got that a little bit of a spine that you can build around. But, I mean, the transfer window, it's not really suggested that Sendai are getting any better. If anything, they look a bit worse on paper, especially in attacking areas.
Well, that's it, isn't it? Yeah, 17th last season, they only had two players score more than three goals. Your favourite, Shun Nagasawa, with 9, and Alexander Guedes with 5, but both have now left the club. Were you surprised they didn't extend Guedes' loan, or indeed sign him on a permanent basis? Because when he was given half an opportunity, he did look decent up front for Vegalta.
Yeah, I thought he was their best player last season, even though he didn't really reach the heights that you perhaps thought he would have. He had a very good record in Portugal the season before, so yeah, it was a surprise. Maybe he just didn't want to stay around. Maybe he didn't fancy a J1 relegation battle next season. We'll never know. But yeah, they lost, and Nagasawa as well, and Nishimura went, his loan ended, and Yamada's loan ended. So they really lost kind of four or five pretty good attackers, or for at least for their level, Sendai. And really, in terms of strikers, they've not really replaced them. They're going to go into this season with Yusuke Minagawa and Shuhei Akasaki. And, I mean, if those two get five each, I mean, that would be wonderful for them.
Well, that's it, isn't it? Yeah, so Minagawa has arrived from Yokohama FC. He has just 8 top flight goals in 94 J1 appearances, and well, yeah, I guess one of the bigger names. I don't know whether he's really a big name in J1 circles or not, but definitely a well-known player is Martinus from his time with Yokohama F Marinos, and most recently, of course, Urawa. But he's yet to put together a consistent run of goal-scoring form during his 4 seasons in the league. He netted 4 times in 23 appearances for Reds last year. So, those three, as you mentioned, Akasaki as well up front. And I guess the creative responsibilities, they lie almost entirely with Isaac Cuenca, don't they? His 2020 was severely derailed by injuries. But I guess the wild card perhaps could be a Ghanaian winger, Emmanuel Otti. Do you know much about him, and what can Sendai supporters expect?
Well, I mean, he's come from the second division in Portugal, where Vizela, I think it is, and really he didn't play too much there at all, if anything, really. His goal record and assist record looks pretty sparse on paper. I can't claim to have ever watched him play, but yeah, there's nothing really shouting out at me that says this is the man that's going to save Galatasaray. And I think a lot is going to rely on Martinus playing to the levels that he did right at the end of last season for Reds, and for Cuenca just to have like an injury-free season and play to the levels that he can. I mean, I didn't really know much about the Tegemari way of playing. I mean, his time in J1 was before I was watching, and the only bits I'd seen previously was when he was in charge of the Olympics team, when they had an awful tournament out in Rio. So, but I've been told that they're kind of focused down the wings. That's really the way they want to go, and that's kind of what's been shown with the signings they've made, with Martinus, with Oti, with Rio Makeda, who's come in from Nagasaki as well. And it looks like they're going to be fairly strong in those areas. It's just, if they're going to create things, is there anyone to put those chances away? And I think it might be a frustrating season for the likes of Cuenca and Martinus.
Well, yeah, so the second part of Ralph's question, again, most of you will know him on Twitter as Akakichino 11, was about Martinus. And, of course, Ralph is a Red supporter, so he will have watched Martinus very closely over the past couple of seasons. Basically asks, could Tegutomori saving Vigalta hinge on Martinus's abilities, I guess? Could it hinge on whether he gets the 2020 version of Martinus or the 2018/2019 one? Is he going to be that important, do you think?
Well, without wanting to put a massive downer on Vigalta Sendai, I think it doesn't matter how well he plays, I think they're going to go down. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, he is the kind of a very inconsistent player. You saw flashes of him at Yokohama, where he was fantastic and then dropped off. And then a lot of the time at Reds, he was just a kind of frustrated figure. I remember there was one Emperor's Cup game, and I think he'd won a penalty, and then he was subbed off immediately. So he just booted the ball into the crowd and stormed off, which kind of summed up his the way he was feeling at the time and just kind of his general attitude at that moment. But he did then turn it around at the end of last season. So there is a really good player in there. So hopefully that can be harnessed. And I mean, yeah, if they're going to have any chance of surviving, you'd really need Martinus to have perhaps the season of his career.
Rightio then. Okay, so yeah, we said we were going to be a bit more positive on this on this episode, didn't we, Sam? But I think we've started on a little bit of a downer. But yeah, I'm sure Sendai supporters understand they will have been hugely frustrated over the last few seasons, and especially in 2020, even with all those caveats that we always have to keep applying to last year. Andrew Schmidt's question was an interesting one, wasn't it, Sam? And I guess it's something that might help us to reset our focus somewhat as we work our way through these preview episodes. I mean, we are aware that we have a very varied audience for this podcast. Some are, avid J-League watchers, and some only like to dip their toes in every now and again. Some are watching games every weekend, and some are only able to catch highlights. But Andrew, asked or slash requested for those of us that really don't know anything at all about the teams that aren't our own, it'd be cool to hear even a little about the style of soccer each team plays. So I guess, yeah, for a neutral, if you're looking for something to do on a Saturday afternoon or maybe over in the States early Saturday morning, yeah, would you get out of bed to watch Sendai? I mean, you have to in your job, Sam. And, I mean, yeah, we haven't painted a particularly rosy picture so far. But, yeah, I guess defensive football, trying to grind out points here and there are basically what we can look forward to from Sendai in 2021.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. As I say, I asked the J2 guys just what do I expect from Tegramori, and their one-word response was boring. So that didn't really set me up too well. It does look like they're going to focus on defence a lot more, try and then attack down the wings, use Martinez, use Cuenca, try and then grind out 1-0s, 2-1s, that sort of thing. I don't expect it to be particularly exciting. The only saving grace of watching Sendai early in the morning is their supporters are fantastic when they play at home. So yeah, they're good to watch from that respect. But yeah, I wouldn't be tuning into Sendai expecting fantastic flowing football this season.
All right. Well, yeah, we'll try and remember to broach the topic of style of play with each of these five clubs, Andrew, and all the rest of them moving forward. If we don't, you can hold me personally responsible because I've probably forgotten. Sendai, a relegation dogfight. Birth looks inevitable, and so we'll just wait and see if there are four teams worse than them at the end of the season. I think both of us are leaning that there probably won't be at this stage, but you never do know. All right, well, let's move a little bit further down Honshu to Ibaraki Prefecture and at Kashima Antlers. They are managed by the Brazilian Zago. He's in his second season. Got off to a very rocky start, of course, at the beginning of 2020 with Antlers failing to qualify for the ACL group stage after losing in a playoff. They ended up fifth last season in the top flight, the second straight season without a trophy for them, which is not particularly noteworthy for most teams, but for the most successful club in J1 history, it represents a significant drought. Since 2007, when they won their fifth league title and began a run of three straight, they'd won a trophy. They'd won at least one trophy every year except 2014, claiming four leagues, three Emperor's Cups, and three Levain Cups in that time, and of course the ACL title in 2018, among others, Super Cups and Suruga Bank trophies, etc., etc. So, yeah, without saying, I mean, Green Bay is title town in the United States. There's no doubt that Kashima is title town in Japan when it comes to football. So, yeah, fifth last year, Sam. They'd been third each of the previous two seasons. Caveats and asterisks aside, are they running it back in 2021, but at the risk of sliding down a little bit further, or are you a bit optimistic they'll be able to right their ship in this new season?
I'm quite optimistic about Kashima. I thought the way they played second half of last season, I think they were only Kawasaki were a better team at that point. They really struggled at that start of that season, just trying to adapt to the way Zago was playing. They'd made a lot of transfers in that previous January window, so it took them a while to get going. But once they did, and especially with Everaldo up front, I thought they played really well. And yeah, they were so close to Champions League football on that final day of the season. So yeah, a lot more positivity about Kashima. I think they'll be there or thereabouts this season. I think an ACL berth, I think, would be a minimum requirement for them. And yeah, it looks they haven't done too much in terms of transfers, which is probably they probably didn't need to because they'd done a lot of their work last season. Now they've bedded those players in, and what they have done, I think Diego Pituca especially looks a really good signing, probably the eventual replacement for Leo Silva. So yeah, they've not done too much, but what they have done, I think, looks really good.
All right. Well, yeah, Everaldo basically just smashed his way into the J1 Best 11, didn't he, with his performances in the second half of the season, finishing with the wettest of sails with the six goals in Kashima's final nine league games. ISA Wada, who is a bit of an enigma, but yeah, did put in some excellent performances last year, managed to get into double figures with 10 league goals, and Sean Madoy scored six. We've mentioned the ACL a couple of times already, Sam, and Gabriel Anello is back with a question about Antlers and in reference to the ACL. And yeah, he's thinking it might be a blessing in disguise that, yeah, in the final seconds of their final game in 2020 against Cerezo Osaka, they were the width of a post away from finishing above, from winning that game against Cerezo and finishing above them, which would have meant an ACL playoff spot for the second straight season. But Gabriel wonders, could this also be an opportunity for Antlers? He means obviously missing out on the ACL in 2021. With no ACL and one more year under Zago, they might have a serious run at the title, although Gab says beating Frontale seems impossible right now. Again, you probably don't want to give too much away in terms of your overall predictions and the table in your head, Sam, but do you think they will be the closest challengers to Kawasaki this year as it stands?
I think they're maybe one of two good challenges to them, but I think, yeah, they will be right up there. And I think ACL, not having the ACL will definitely help. You saw what it kind of did to Yokohama and Tokyo and Kobe last season. I know it won't be quite as bad this year with the fixture congestion, but it's still going to be when they have to, yeah, play extra fixtures before the Champions League in this bubble, wherever they might be playing it in April. And then, obviously, with the Olympics as well. So they've had to... those teams are going to have a lot of fixture congestion. So it will definitely benefit Cashman not playing that, although they won't have thought that on that final day when they were narrowly missing out on the Champions League. But yeah, having that kind of free run of games where you're allowed to rest your players in the Levain Cup group stage and have everyone fit and firing at each weekend, I think it can only be a benefit for them. And so, like, yeah, teams like Cashman and Tokyo, I'd say, are going to be the biggest beneficiaries of that going forward.
All right, so yeah, a couple of other questions based around the answers that you've given already. Sam, you might have already spoiled your answer to Thomas Bennington's question, who can mount a more serious title challenge, Thomas's Tokyo or Kashima Antlers. Sounds like, yeah, Kashima you think are more likely?
Yeah, I think Kashima are a little bit more like, I think they've just got a little bit more quality in all areas. Tokyo, I think, on their day can beat anyone the way they play with their kind of counter-attacking football. But, yeah, I just like that Leo Silva and Kento Misawa in midfield. I just think that is probably where they have the edge for me over Tokyo. And then they're adding Pituka to that as well, where Tokyo's is a little bit more threadbare and you might be pushing Morishige into midfield. So, yeah, I'd give Kashima just about the edge, but then I'd also have Yokohama F. Marinos back in there. I don't think they can really be ruled out, especially without Champions League football themselves. And I mean, there's still a bit of the transfer window left for them to improve their squad. So yeah, those three I'd say would be the strongest challengers, I think, to Kawasaki this season.
Yeah, righty. Okay, and you mentioned a Diego Pichuca. Obviously, he and his fellow incoming Brazilian midfielder Arthur Kaike are yet to arrive in the country. All of the other ins for Antlers this season are youth products, either out of a high school, university, or their own youth system. So Johnny Nichols back with some more questions for us this week. Thanks again, Johnny. And his first one was kind of a wide-ranging one, you know, that I guess covers pretty much all of the clubs that we're going to talk about in this episode, with new foreign players only being able to enter Japan once the state of emergency ends. How quickly do you think they'll be able to settle in, and is it as big a disadvantage as it might first appear? So it'll probably be quite a while before we see Pichuca, Kaiki, and all of the other incoming Brazilian players to various clubs in action. But what do you think based on Johnny's question?
Yeah, it's a really interesting one. It definitely depends on the club that you're at. I think teams like Kashima, like Kashua, both with Brazilian managers, a big Brazilian base in that squad, I think it's easier for a player to come in late and then to adapt to that team. But when you've got a different squad, let me just say Shonan from last season, for example. If Tarek El-Yunusi came in late, is the only foreign player that came into that squad, it's going to be really difficult for him to then integrate into that squad that's been together for the last couple of months, that have kind of got their way of working, and for him to come in as a complete outsider would be really difficult. So, yeah, I'd say it'd be easier at those sorts of clubs, but then, again, if we take Kashua, if they are going to sign this striker to replace Olunga, it's going to really he's going to be forced in, you'd think, a lot quicker than maybe Pituka might be, because they've got two players ahead of, well, in his position that are pretty, very good players. But if you, I don't know, random Brazilian that comes in for Kashua up front, I think he's going to be forced to, like, kind of arrive, get into training and be forced into playing football immediately. And I don't think he'll be up to speed. I don't think he'll be ready. And I think that'll knock his confidence and that sort of thing. So, yeah, it's really difficult. I think Kashima, of these five teams that we're talking about here, when they've, because they've got the foreign players coming in, I think that's probably the best place for them, because the rest of the squad is already ready and they're just going to add to it, and it'd be like a really nice new signing comes in say May or whenever. But for Kashima, if they're forcing players to come in quickly, yeah, I think it might be more of an issue.
Rightio then. So yeah, Kaiki and Pachuca are the major ins that that I can tell anyway. Are there outs? Are headlined by retiring veteran keeper Hitoshi Sogahata, with Leandro's loan move to FC Tokyo made permanent, Sho Ito transferring to Yokohama FC, and Tatsuki Nara joining Fukuoka on loan, as we mentioned last week. But I don't think any of those four, well, obviously Leandro was with Tokyo last year, Sam, so none of those are going to weaken the squad at all, really, are they? Nara was hardly used, as we know. So it's pretty much as you were, and obviously, yeah, Antlers with no ACL will just be hoping to get off to a decent start this time around, and if Everaldo can carry on the form that he showed in the second half of last season, then perhaps the sky's the limit.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's just carry on, as it were. Don't fix anything that isn't broken, which it wasn't at the end of last season. I think, they'll, as long as they get off to a good start, I think they'll be there or thereabouts. And then those two new signings coming in, whenever they are, will just add a little bit of freshness to that team and maybe take them to the next level. So I really think Kashima are in for a pretty good season.
All right. So, yeah, there might be another trophy on the way to the Kashima Soccer Stadium this season of some description. And one thing that we can count on is that they will be up around the sharp end of J1. It's now 8 seasons in a row where they finished 5th or better. So, we'd expect them to be up around there as well in 2021. So, going back to Andrew's question, for a neutral, is it worth getting up at 6:30 or stupid o'clock in the morning to check out a Kashima Antlers game under Zago?
Yeah, definitely. I really enjoy watching Kashima. And they're one of these teams that can kind of mix it up as well. Their basic formation is some variant of 4-4-2, but the end of last season it was more a kind of 4-2-2-2 with two holders. Then you had Shoma Doi and Juan Alano, kind of three roles in behind the two strikers. And then you've got Everaldo and Ayase Ueda, who worked really well together. They're just quick passing through the midfield. They're really dynamic, but then they can mix it up and go for crosses with Everaldo can meet them. He's just, terrific in the air. And they've also got this variant that they play, which is that they go three up front and they chuck Everaldo out to the left-hand side and just pin him on a really small fullback. Just then ping the balls up to him there. He wins absolutely everything in that position. So, they really mix things about. They definitely go forward. But they're not quite as like a gung-ho Yokohama F. Marinos team or anything like that. Their back four is quite rigid. They will sit in there, and then Leo Silva will do the box-to-box midfield work, and Kento Misao will then patrol and do just kind of the dirty work, but it does it fantastically. So, it's a really well-oiled machine, and it's got loads of different variants that really make them quite exciting to watch.
Indeed. And, Ralph was back with a cheeky little question about Kashima. Will we finally see the referees do something about their frequent unsportsmanlike behaviour? I can handle that for you, Ralph. There's no way in the world that will ever happen. There's something in the water up in Kashima. They always win trophies, and they get a lot of leeway with the officials. There's no question about that. So I can't see that changing anytime soon. All right, we are 2/5 of the way through our preview. After a quick hit of music, Ryan Steele will join us to chat about Urawa Reds. The next club that we'll preview is Urawa Reds, and joining us to do that is Ryan Steele, our Urawa correspondent. Ryan, welcome back to J-Talk. How are you?
Good. Relatively upbeat for the time being. Thanks.
All right. Well, we'll see how upbeat you are in about 15 to 20 minutes. But, we're here to talk about Urawa's prospects for the 2021 season, where they will be managed by Ricardo Rodriguez, friend of J-Talk Extra Time, of course. He arrives after taking Tokushima to the J2 title. He replaces Tsuyoshi Otsuki in the Saitama Stadium dugout. The 2017 ACL and 2018 Emperor's Cup winners have struggled mightily throughout the past two seasons. Ryan doesn't need any reminding of that. Finishing 14th in 2019 and 10th last season. Ryan, obviously, it just wasn't good enough. It hasn't been good enough the past few seasons. What do you think? How do you think the club have gone about addressing that in this off season?
First things first, you know, they cut the snake off at its head. So that's a important thing. They've changed coaches and, that's a step in the right direction at least, because they kind of understand that big change needed to happen. How much of that change, you know, there's been huge amount of transfers, both in and out of the club, especially out. I think there's been more out than in. That change kind of leads to some positivity. It's a lot of unknown, because a lot of the names that have come in are ones that we haven't really seen in J1 or haven't even had a chance to be tested in J1 yet. So, we can't really say for sure how they'll fare, but, I suppose positivity is the best outlook for now, to just, you know, be looking forward to seeing how those new players go and how the team looks under Ricardo Rodriguez.
So how optimistic are you, with him coming in? And he's done extremely well at Tokushima. How tangible will his effect be in the early stages of the season, perhaps, on the way Reds go about things? Because, Otsuki didn't have too many fans outside the Reds front office, of course, who kept him on for 2020.
Too long.
Yeah, when most thought a change was due at the end of 2019. Whether the club have done an enormous amount of business in the transfer market, I mean, a new philosophy coming to the club from a reasonably successful coach must fill you with a little bit of optimism at least.
Yeah, this is, with respect to his previous clubs, I think his biggest challenge, his biggest step up, playing in a well-known club across all of Asia in the top league of Japan is a difficult task for most managers, I think, and it's going to be a big challenge for him. He does have a pretty good reputation in Japan for taking Tokushima through to J1 in style, I'd say, last season. And I think having that was kind of the pedigree that Urawa kind of wanted or would have liked. Definitely, I think the fans kind of see that as a positive. Have that experience, the several years in Japan, and be able to prove himself and show that he's able to help build a club and help them progress to a bigger stage. It's a little bit reminiscent in signing Mihailo Petrovic from San Frecce, all those years ago. But, obviously quite a different shape that they'll be expecting to take. And I think that's, it's a positive step. It's one that is somewhat exciting because it's something new and it's something relatively unknown. We don't know how much he's going to change, and it's such a new team that he actually has that chance to kind of take something new and build upon it, and then, given some time, be able to make some extra changes and kind of shape that into something that can really test for titles and whatever other stages they might look to do. Not going to say anything too early, but I think every Urawa fan eventually wants to be back on the Asian stage again. So I think that's a goal for the future, not one for the immediate. It's definitely a positive. I don't think there's any question about that from most of the fans. It's something that they're mostly looking forward to.
At Tokushima, Ricardo Rodriguez kind of famed for his possession style. They'd keep the ball for long periods. Do you think that is a well-suited system for the players at Reds, or would you think it might take them a little while to kind of adapt to that?
I always thought, especially last season, they didn't really do that, or when they did, they just didn't do it well. But I did think that they had the players for it then. And a lot of the transfers now are quite midfield heavy. They're a lot more, I suppose, creative or a lot more proactive. I think that's going to go well for Ricardo Rodriguez in being able to implement something like that in the team. A bit more organization, a bit more structure, kind of a more coherent playing system where, you know, the players are aware of what the other players are doing and not kind of reacting to it. They're, you know, moving along in this kind of not machine, like not so rigid, but being able to understand what the roles of themselves and the players around them do will actually make such a huge difference. I think that it is something that should be suited to most of the players that have definitely the ones that have come in. A lot of the ones up front were ones that were better in that situation. So I think that's going to be, or at least that's kind of what I expect to see from them going forward. That more proactive pressing style, as opposed to sitting back and kind of waiting for the ball to get into the opponent's final third before really trying to win the ball back, led to a lot of mistakes last time. So knowing that Tokushima weren't so much like that and that Ricardo Rodriguez likes that kind of higher pressing is going to be much more pleasing on the eye. And should lead to some better, more positive performances with that.
All right. So, yeah, we did get a few different questions from our patrons on Reds. And for Andrew Schmidt, yeah, hopefully Ryan's answer there has gone some way to letting you know about Urawa's style of play. They can be easy on the eye at times. It'll be definitely interesting to see how they perform under Rodriguez. So I would recommend checking them out if you get the chance. Thomas Pennington and Naoya Kanai both basically asked general questions about how well will Ricardo Rodriguez do now, as Naoya says, newly rebooted under Ricardo Rodriguez. Well, Sam, you probably want to weigh in yourself here. How do you think Rodriguez will go? It's obviously left a huge hole in Tokushima, but as Ryan says, he comes in highly regarded. So how much of an overhaul are you expecting, or do you think Rodriguez will take it easy at first as he slowly tries to bed in his teachings, if you like?
I kind of think it's going to be a fairly decent overhaul from the start. I think he's going to put his stamp on this team, which really hasn't had a stamp put on it for ages. I think Otsky just kind of went with the flow, and I don't think anyone really knew what they were doing playing under him. So I'm just happy that there's a clear system going to be in place under Rodriguez, and I think they'll definitely benefit from that. But when you see these teams that go from complete changes, when Postecoglou came in at Yokohama, they took a team that was fourth playing under Eric Momberts. It was a difficult season, that first season. So you can imagine that maybe trying to get all these pieces together could leave Reds in a little bit of danger for a while this season. But I think eventually his methods will come good and Reds will improve probably second half of the season. And then next year will be the real season that you see Rodriguez's proper stamp of being made on this Reds team.
Well, you're very good at this, Sam, because my next question was going to be, are there echoes of Postecoglou and whether Rodriguez has the right squad for the way he wants to play football? So, well, there you go. You've absolutely nailed my next question before I even got a chance to ask it. There's a couple of other questions from Naoya that we'll get to as well, Ryan, but one from your fellow redhead. I don't know if there is a collective term for red supporters, but we'll go with redhead for the time being.
The matchsticks.
Something like that. Ralph, again, a.k.a. Kaki Chino 11, he asks how fast Rika can turn around our team, again, not my team, but your team, and whether, obviously a huge part of this is whether the fans have enough patience for it. As Sam says there, if early returns are not particularly, well, if they're not good enough, basically, yeah, how much patience, especially, I suppose, considering the last few seasons and some of the dross that you've had to sit through, do you think Rodriguez will be given a particularly long leash? I mean, I'm not suggesting he'll be sacked after 6 weeks or anything like that, but, yeah, they are notorious, aren't they, on the terraces at Saitama Stadium. So, yeah, basically, do you think the Red supporters will have enough patience to sit through a rough start to the season if it pans out, I guess, as Sam suggested it might?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. Like Sam said, you know, Postecoglou had kind of teething problems, I suppose you could say, getting the kind of early stages and getting that stuff into motion. His playing style was so different. It will probably be, you know, somewhat the same with Ricardo Rodriguez early on. There might be some really good results and there might be some really bad ones. It's hard to say for sure, but I think the main thing for fans is just seeing a change and seeing a clear plan and vision and reasonable performances, even if the result doesn't go their way, will be the thing that kind of keeps them on board. Not just with Ricardo Rodriguez, but with the club, because usually the brunt of the blame goes to the club, rightfully, when things like last season happen or the season before. It's always down to the decisions of the board. But at the same time, if Ricardo Rodriguez can keep the fans on side, then you know, he's going to have all that time that he needs to be able to get things settled and get his plan into place. But yeah, it's just about seeing that clear vision and something being built towards. If they can't see that, if it just looks like headless chooks running around the pitch, then yeah, it's going to be kind of the same story all over again.
All right. So as we get to the ins and outs at Saitama Stadium for 2021, I guess the name player outs are the centre mids, Everton, whose contract expired, and Takuya Aoki, who, thanks a lot, Ryan, has joined FC Tokyo. winger Kazuki Nagasawa has joined Nagoya, and the defender Daiki Hashioka, who was a regular over the past couple of seasons, has gone on loan to Sint-Truiden in Belgium. The ins, again, I might have missed a couple of gems that have come in either out of university or from J2, but of the name players that I recognise, of course, J-Soccer Magazine cover star Daigo Nishi has arrived from Kobe. Daiki Kaneko, hardly the biggest name, but he's arrived from Shonan. And Oita's leading scorer, Tatsuya Tanaka, has come on board as well. So, Sam, I'll come to you first on the ins and outs. How do you think they've worked out? Are they a net positive or about a net zero, do you think?
It's probably about a net zero. I'd say the midfield losses, there were three players there that could play central midfield. So you're really running out of players there. Kaneko, I think, well, we had him, what did he come second in our Shonan poll last, best player of the season last year. Mm-hmm. I think he's a really good sign. And I think, yeah, he'll slot in nicely. But I'd worry about a little bit of depth in central midfield and in defence as well. When Hashioka's gone, he'll be replaced by Daigo Nishi, you'd imagine, would come in there. But then Daisuke Suzuki, obviously not like the greatest player in the world, but he's also left. But leaves like very few options in defence. And then up front, a lot will depend on whether Leonardo stays or goes. It's kind of in flux at the moment. But the striking options, they brought in Takahiro Akimoto from Tochigi, who had a very good season for Tochigi, but whether he'll make the step up, I don't know. It'd be certainly a massive drop if they have to lose Leonardo and then replace him with Akimoto. Although he's only 23, so there's definitely room for improvement there. But then, otherwise, Tanaka looks, yeah, he should be a decent player. I mean, Gamba and Oita, he always did, he can score goals, but he was never normally an absolute shoo-in to play. So that brings a few questions about his consistency. But I think Yeah, he should be able to play right wing, and I think he'd be a decent signing. But it's not, again, like, there's no massive clear signing there that's just like a statement signing from Herrera. It doesn't, yeah, it's been, I'd say, slightly underwhelming.
Indeed. So, yeah, Ryan, what's your take on the club's transfer business? Obviously, with Leonardo now being the elephant in the room, we were chatting in the green room. We just really don't know what's going on there. And obviously, as a Reds fan, you'd love some clarity. Yeah, you want to get this sorted one way or the other. He's either moving to China or he isn't. And let's find out well before the season starts. I mean, obviously, his 11 goals last season were a decent return. But considering the expectations we had after his arrival from, your feeder club, Niigata, we would have expected nearly double that. So, if he were to leave, I guess it would be, pretty much with his tail between his legs after, a somewhat underwhelming first season. But, overall, how do you feel the club have gone in the market?
I mean, in terms of an overhaul, they've done a great job. but I don't think, as Sam said, there are any, like, bright lights, particularly in that. There are no, as I've decided to call them, game-changer sort of signings, the Ewertons or the Leonardos or even like a Mauricio at the back or something like that, you know, that kind of, not necessarily a foreigner, even though I just provided three foreigner examples, but the that kind of player where you would see them on the team sheet and you would think, that's one we need to look out for. There's not really that sort of player that's come in. I agree with Sam that Kaneko is going to be a probably an important player in that kind of pivot in the midfield. How exactly Ricardo Rodriguez kind of plays might even depend on whether Leonardo stays or not. If he does, then that gives him a lot of great options for attacking. But if not, then that does start to, you know, kind of pull on the depth of the team, because they are still lacking. It's been the story of pretty much every season, though, that they have trouble in depth. And again, defense is exactly in the same position as it was, as it has been. And with Hashioka gone, kind of relying on Nishi, I would like to see Thomas Deng play on the right, be given that chance. He does have experience in that position. He's played so many times on the right. We already know that he's comfortable with the ball at his feet. He's not necessarily the same kind of right back as Hashioka, but he is competent. We know he's a solid defender. If he's comfortable with the ball at his feet, he's able to provide a pass, then I don't see why he couldn't be an option. That also gives that bit of flexibility for being able to kind of move other players around. And we're not super reliant on Nishi if he has a bad match or has a run of bad form, that we don't really have that other option. And we really need that flexibility. I'd like to see, I'm looking forward to seeing Koizumi from FC Ryukyu come in. I don't necessarily expect him to be a regular, but I do think he could maybe have some sort of impact on the way that the team is structured and have that flexibility. I'm looking forward to seeing some of these younger players come in and be given chances. That is a positive to see that most of the players that have come in for the essentially old guard are younger players. So it is a something where it's kind of a mixed bag reception, where, you know, you can be disappointed where it's not this kind of, you know, as it has been in the last few years, which didn't really matter, a team that looks great on paper. But, there are positives to go along with that in being such a young team that can kind of shape into something different than we've seen recently.
Well, that was another question that, Akakichino 11 posed. He says that, many interesting young players have joined Reds recently. Are there any in particular that you guys think could take off in Rodriguez's team. He mentions, Akimoto, who Sam's mentioned, and of course Hidetoshi Takeda, who came into the first team in the last few games of the 2020 season, firstly making his J1 debut, and then, three appearances in total at the end of the season. Akakichino 11 says they seem to have had a pretty good pre-season so far. I guess the flip side of that is the last part of Naoya Kanai's question, which veterans might find themselves on the outside looking in if some of these young players are given more of an opportunity in the team. So, Sam, I don't know whether you think they've cleared out a bit of dead wood or not, or whether all of the players that have left were of varying importance to the overall squad or not. But, if Rodriguez does put some faith in youth, is there likely to be higher profile, bigger names that are forced to take a spell on the sidelines?
Well, I think you'd say maybe Ugajin would play a little bit less. I'd say Rodriguez would prefer Yamanaka as that sort of style at left back. They've cleared out a lot of maybe aging deadwood or something in midfield. Although I'd have kept Everton. I thought he was a good player. I'd have got rid of Alki, but yeah, Everton would have played. And Kashiwagi was kind of cleared out last season anyway. He barely featured. He played the occasional game, so it's not like that. And I don't see them clearing out Shinzo Kuroki up front either. I mean, he was still top scorer last season, so I don't necessarily see massive clear out of any further kind of aging players. I imagine just due to the lack of other options, Makino will probably continue and Kuroki will continue, and then maybe Muto might see a little bit less football. Maybe he brings in Koizumi to play that role. So maybe Muto and Ugajin may be the most likely players to kind of lose their spot. But yeah, you'd see Nishikawa would continue, Makino and Kuroki.
Kuroki just keeps on keeping on, doesn't he? 10 goals in the league last year, into double figures in J1 for the ninth straight season, and obviously all eight that he spent with Urawa. So you can probably pencil him in for 10 again, Ryan. But yeah, if Leonardo does go, and obviously Martin is your third top scorer last year, and he's gone to Sendai. So yeah, a lot piles onto the shoulders of your man Kenny, Kenyu Sugimoto, of course. The heights of a 2017 when he scored a 22 league goals with Cerezo and made the best 11. He's undergone a personality transplant or what, I don't know, but
just tricked us. He tricked us. He had us fooled.
I reckon, most certainly, yeah. So you're not relying on him, obviously, but yeah, you're hoping for some breakouts from some of the younger players. Takeda, I don't know whether he's the great white hope or not, but he's one that all Reds supporters have got their eyes on. And I don't know if we want to be glass half empty or glass half full, Ryan. Do you want to go under the assumption that Leonardo's going to be there, or do you want to go to the last part of Akakichino 11's question and ponder who the club might be getting in as a replacement if he indeed does go?
Yeah, well, I mean, if he stays, it's kind of, I mean, the question's kind of answered on its own because he's still there. But if he does go, and I've been kind of acting under the assumption for the last couple of days that he is departing. There aren't many options in that position. I would hope that Ricardo Rodriguez saw enough of Sugimoto last year to know that he's not going to be the option on the pitch, regardless of whatever happens off it. I don't think he has the photographs that he had for Otsuki to get him all that game time that he was receiving. It could just result in a change of formation, instead of having that kind of twin partnership, that we saw, last year. It might be Kuroki up top and he has a couple of support players behind him, whether that's in a shadow role or whether that's an attacking midfielder or two attacking midfielders or something like that. You've got Tatsu Tanaka, we've got Koizumi, we've got several players, Akimoto as well. Akimoto, I think, might be kind of fighting for a position with Sekine, so that is possibly an option where he kind of comes in as a shadow for Kuroki. and is able to provide that support, kind of similar to Leonardo did, more of a running sort of player. There are other alternatives. It doesn't have to be a kind of player has to fit into the exact same spot. It's a very different team, so I think it has to be adapted to suit that. So, I think if Leonardo does go, and like I said, I'm kind of working under the assumption that he is, I think it's just going to mean a change in the way that they have their attacking lineup set up. And that could be like a 4-5-1, so an extra player in the midfield that will kind of allow for a bit more possession play, which kind of wouldn't work with two up front as well. That might actually be what Ricardo Rodriguez was kind of aiming for in the first place.
All right. So, Sam, before I get your final thoughts on where you think Reds are at the moment in your table, in your head, have we done right by our patrons? Have we got through all of the questions from them? Have I missed anything before we wrap up with Ryan?
There's nothing. I don't think we've missed anything out, but.
Yeah.
No, I think we're good.
Yeah, all right then. Okay, so 10th last season. Obviously, this year, that would, again, put them in the middle of the pack in a 20-team J1. So, where are they at the moment in your table, in your head?
Yeah, well, they've dotted around all over the place a little bit in my table. I've got them kind of mid-table again. I've got them for another 10th place finish. I think it'll be more exciting than it was last season. I think it's just not Otsky, so that's good. But it might be a little ambitious, but I think there's so many poor teams in this league. I think eventually Rodriguez will get it right. And yeah, I think 10th is just about right for them. And then next season is when they should be looking up towards the ACL places.
All right. So yeah, what's your prognosis at the moment, Ryan? Where are you leaning towards a finishing position? It's obviously a long way to go, but what are your thoughts at the moment?
I'm starting to think that, I'm starting to hope that maybe that means that the Sam Robson curse has been lifted. the jinx that is put on us for the last few years of the high expectations and ending up falling on our faces, that might be coming to an end. But in all seriousness, I think it's because it's such a new team, and we also have no idea what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks in terms of the team completely changing again, possibly with players departing. I'm not putting any like high expectations on this season. Like I said, the only thing I want to see this season is coherent performances and a clear direction for the team and under Ricardo Rodriguez. So I kind of am in the same along the same lines as Sam. Kind of think that sort of mid-table, I might go as high as 8th. Anything above that would be a very positive season, and then after that, we would start kind of reaching for the stars in terms of, ACL places. But for the time being, kind of, keep it under wraps, keep it kind of low pressure and be able to build something. I think, that's where I'm looking at the moment.
All right, then. Well, terrific to get your thoughts on the new project at Reds under Ricardo Rodriguez. And once again, to Andrew Smith's earlier question, I would recommend checking out Reds. They're going to be a work in progress for, as we've kind of been alluding to, at least the first few months of the season as Rodriguez beds in his methods. But it should be, never a dull moment, as there usually never is at the Saitama Stadium. So Ryan, terrific stuff. Thanks again for that, and we'll definitely obviously be keeping an eye on Reds as they get along under their new boss. And, yeah, we'll hope to catch up with you, well, yeah, several times throughout the season. It's going to be a fascinating year, obviously, for your team. So, yeah, we look forward to catching up with you again.
Yeah, it's good to finally put the last year behind us. And, yeah, it's great to be talking with you again under better circumstances, hopefully.
Yes, that weight lifted off your shoulders. Yes, we can tell it's made a huge difference. All right, then. So thanks again to Ryan. After a quick hit of music, Sam and I will be back to talk about Kashua Reysol. Okay, great to hear from Ryan on, what's sure to be a fascinating season for Reds. We'll move on and talk about the Sun Kings of Kashua Reysol. They are managed by Nelsinho, who is now into his third full season of his second stint at the club. Last year, Reysol was seventh in their first season back in the top flight and made it to the Levain Cup final. But, Sam, I wonder if Reysol supporters might be looking over their shoulders as the new season gets ready to get going.
Well, I can't imagine there's a great deal of positivity after losing the goals of Michael Olunga. They're going to be very difficult to replace, and really they haven't tried to do that yet. They've still got the few million dollars burning a hole in their pockets. So, yeah, and there's still time in the window for them to kind of use that money and kind of sort themselves out. But without him and with no replacement, I mean, yeah, it's looking like a long season for them.
Indeed. So I believe I've got the numbers right. I gave them a couple of weeks ago. I think it was 60 league goals for Reysol in 2020, and Olunga scored 28 of them. So, yes, obviously that is a massive hole, as Sam says, they are yet to fill. And unsurprisingly, the questions from our patrons on Reysol were basically exclusively about Olunga. Thomas Pennington wonders if, Kashua are now contenders for a bottom half finish after Olunga's departure. Akakichino 11, can they somehow compensate for the loss of Olunga? And Charlotte Patterson, as I said, came in just the nick of time. Wonders if we can see them finishing as high as seventh again without Olunga. Are there any current, I guess this is the most important of all of the questions, Sam, from Charlotte. Are there any current players in the Reysol squad who can hope to hit near enough his heights? Have they succeeded in replacing him? It doesn't look like they have.
Yeah, they haven't replaced him. The only striker they've brought in is Angelotti, who was from Bragantino, but really spent the last half of last season in the fourth tier of Brazil. So if you're pinning your hopes on him, I think it's a little bit of a reach. But in terms of the players that they've got, I'd imagine maybe they'd move Cristiano up front. Missed half of last season. That was a terrific player on his day. So if you play him, you've got Segura, who's a good player. Esaka was fantastic last season. Then maybe you move Nakama to right wing or Kamiya. So they have got good players, but you would expect two or three of them to really have to click to kind of compensate for Olunga's goals, because last year they did just rely on going through Olunga, so they kind of have to adapt their way of playing. But it's not like there are poor players there, so you'd have to hope that they could improve. And Goya had a really good season for Nagasaki in J2, but didn't really get the game time last season, of course, with Olunga there. So maybe they can look to him for a more of a run in the team and maybe get some goals. But yeah, I think they're going to have to look into the transfer window and try and sign someone. I know it's really difficult when you're looking to sign a foreign striker who's probably not going to get into the country for a few months. So it makes things really, really difficult. So yeah, they might have to just get by for a few months and then have this whatever striker that I know they've been linked with the various ones in Brazil. So maybe they try and get that one over the line and they come in, let's say, May, and really give a boost to the team. But yeah, otherwise they're relying on those kind of four players that I mentioned just to kind of up their game from last season, try and compensate. But it's not like they're completely devoid of options.
All right. Well, yeah, I guess going back to Johnny Nichols' question from earlier, he did ask it in particular with reference to both Kashima and Kashiwa. And you said earlier that, Antlers could probably afford to wait a little bit for their signings and, yeah, just because of the overall balance of their squad. But with Raisol, it might be a little bit more pressing to get Angelotti, don't call me Carlo, into the squad. Wondering if you know much about Doughty, who is joining from Fluminense. Is definitely a club I know the name of, but I'm not familiar with his stylings. A central midfielder, apparently. Do you think he might get into the team and become a regular once he touches down on Japanese shores?
Yeah, I'd expect him to play pretty much every game for them. He was an almost ever-present for Fluminense. Yeah, he's a little versatile. He can play out wide if he needs to. He can play in an attacking midfield role. So, yeah, really comfortable in possession. I think he'll slot in very nicely when he does come available. I mean, it's not 100% the position that they needed, but I think he's definitely a clear step up on the options they had. Like, especially with Otani now at 36, you've got to say he's probably... Yeah, his playing days are coming towards an end, and Mihara again. Yeah, I think he's on the wrong side of 30. So yeah, fresh legs in, looks a really good technical player. So yeah, once he's available, I think he'll really boost that central midfield area.
All right, so it sounds like a little bit of a Brazilian thunder and lightning there in the central midfield for Reza, with Richardson breaking legs and Doughty pulling the strings. All right, Keiya Shihashi has arrived from Sendai. We were talking in the green room, Sam. We think Shihashi made our shortlist for a Sendai player of the season last year simply because he played the played the most games. It was obviously a rough season up for Vegalta, but Shihashi, yeah, a decent enough player. Do you think he can add much to the squad? And I guess from there you could segue onto the outs, because apart from Olunga, Kosuke Nakamura and obviously Junior Santos, who we've referenced before, are pretty big names, aren't they?
Yeah, so on Shihashi, I just think he's going to be a steady kind of, he'll be a substitute, you'd say. If he's needed, he'll come in, he'll do a relatively good job. I think his steady hand is all I'd go with Shihashi. I wouldn't go any further than that. I think the other, kind of not really an in, just a return from loan, Kamijima from Avispa, who we spoke about last week. I think defence has been an issue for Kashua for a while now, and Kamijima can plug straight into that centre-back role, and he should shore things up. So him and Koga, you'd say, it's got the makings of a decent enough back line. There are still issues, I think, with that, but yeah, Kamijima should really add some steel there. And yeah, the outs, Kosuke Nakamura, I mean, he didn't play much last season, with like the most injury prone goalkeeper I think I've ever seen, so I don't think it'll be too big an issue for them. They've got Kim Seung-yu there, although he kind of made a few ropey errors towards the end of last season. I think he benefits from having competition there, which he doesn't really have now. But yeah, Nakamura, yeah, I think he's just, if he wasn't so injured, I think he'd be a real big loss. But I think, yeah, they've dealt with it without him for so long now, I think they'll probably deal with that. Mm. And then the other, yeah, Junior Santos, who, it baffles me when you've got a massive hole up front and Junior Santos is your player and he's just proven himself at Yokohama to be a very good goal scorer. And you just think, why in the world is he not your striker? It's just made for you. So it just seems like there might be a personality clash with Nelsinho or something, because when he was at Kashua, he barely played. And you it just seemed a no-brainer, really, that he'd go in straight into the first team this season. But it hasn't happened, so... Yeah, that's a little bit of a loss. I think it's a loss for them, but maybe Nelsinho doesn't see it that way.
Yeah, well, that's. I think that'll continue to be a head scratcher for me. But we'll wait and see how Carlo Angelotti does. And obviously the players that they're still there, as Sam mentioned. Yeah, they're all very good. Isaka was excellent last season, obviously, and Cristiano. He's capable of absolutely anything, no questions asked. And, they're huge boots to fill, but, a collective effort. We'll see if the Raisol squad can, try and maintain their top-half status. I guess at this stage of proceedings, Sam, we're probably not all that optimistic they'll be able to do that. But, yeah, again, getting back to Andrew Smith's question, how much will the loss of Olunga affect the way they go about things on a game-to-game basis? You could have just lumped it up to the big man. That's not so much an option with him gone. But, for a neutral, is a racehold game worth checking out? And do you think it still will be now that Olunga's gone?
Yeah, I don't think the style will change too much. I mean, it was obviously a big imposing presence as a striker, but it wasn't like they just got the ball and hoofed it to him and hoped he just held it up. It was always, they'd sit back quite deep and they'd soak up pressure and then they look to counter because they had, Olunga has good pace. Cristiano does, Isaka, Sagawa, and that's kind of where they were at their most dangerous. I think if you look back to the first game of last season against Sapporo, where they just sat back and soaked up all that pressure and then were so dynamic on the counter-attack, got their four goals that way. And yeah, that's when they're at their most dangerous. It's a little bit of a risk for them because I don't think defensively they're very good. So they try and soak up pressure but then concede stupid goals. But when it works in attack, they are lightning quick and they're really good to watch. So, yeah, I definitely, as a neutral as I am, I look forward to watching Kashua games because something will always happen, either sublime going forward or horrendous at the back. So, yeah, you're always in the game. Something's going to happen.
All right, there you go, Andrew. You can't get much better recommendation than that. But I guess I'm sounding a little bit pessimistic about Racehold, Sam, but as we work our way through, I mean, we're not quite halfway through the league yet. I guess another thing to take into consideration is how much better will any of the teams that finished in the bottom half of the table be last season? If Racehold are, I don't know, 10-15% worse, is that going to cost them too many spots in the table? Because I'm not sure that too many of the teams that finished below them last season are primed to do an enormous amount better.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really good point. That's what, when I was going through my table, you'd think Kashua, they're going to drop off somehow. But you look at the teams below them, and no one really has improved. I mean, all those teams, the ones we were talking about last week in Tosu and Oita, and yeah, they've just dropped off, and Sapporo the same. They don't look any better. So I think Kashua might kind of ride the loss of Olunga a little bit. I think they'll drop off slightly, but yeah, I don't think they're relegation candidates just because there's like eight or nine teams that I still think are worse off than them.
Yeah, all right. So, we'll leave Racehold there, I think. So after their seventh place finish in 2020, obviously, I think Racehold, any Racehold supporter would absolutely take seventh in 2021 if you offered it to them right now. We'll wait and see how they get on. The team that finished at one spot above them in the table and indeed beat them in the Levain Cup final on the 4th of January this year is, of course, FC Tokyo, managed by Kenta Hasegawa, who is into his fourth season with the club now after finishes of 6th, 2nd and 6th. But obviously, yeah, getting the monkey off the back for Tokyo and again claiming a fourth major trophy in their history was a huge accomplishment for Hasegawa. But still, I mean, this club, and I can talk about them as my club, as most listeners know, I'm a Tokyo supporter. I think I'm jumping ahead a little bit, Sam, but, don't want to get rid of the good vibes after winning the cup, but it would have been good to see them make a splash or two in the transfer market, and I appreciate the conditions for doing that are, basically unprecedented with everything that's going on around the world, but it looks to me that they're pretty much running back the same squad, and that hasn't quite been good enough in the last three seasons, and I would expect that to be the case again this year.
Yeah, you've not done a great deal. Takuya Aoki, I know that you're not a great fan of, and I mean, it's not going to add too much to this team. Ryoma Watanabe's come in from Yamagata, I think, again, probably a squad player. The one that I'm most interested in is Bruno Uvini, the Brazilian centre-back, who's previously played for the likes of Napoli. He was in the Tottenham youth team. He's got three caps for Brazil, and I think he was good at FC Twente in Holland, and he's kind of been in the Middle East in the last few years in Saudi Arabia and Qatar. He's got pedigree to him. He left Al Ittihad, I think it was. So they didn't pay his wages, so he kind of cancelled his contract there and it became available to Tokyo. And I think he could be a really key player in terms of the way that Tokyo set up, because he can now go into the back line with Watanabe and free up Morishige to go into holding midfield, as he did in the ACL, and it was terrific in the Levant Cup final. And it kind of gives an option there where you were lacking that player, that holding midfielder, once Hashimoto left. So maybe Morishige can fill that. You've got the kind of backup behind him in Uvini, who can slot in there. And it does make Tokyo look a lot solider around. And you've still got all that quality on the counter-attack. Once Diego Oliveira is fit, him and Leandro and Adalto and Nagai. Yeah, there's good options there. Plus, you don't have the Champions League this season. I think that'll be a big benefit to them. I'm reasonably positive about Tokyo. I'd have liked maybe one or two more signings to come in, and maybe they will later in the window. But I think the business that you've done, it's okay. I think, you're not a fan of Takeo Aoki. Do you expect him to be a regular in your team, or would you have him maybe as a bench player?
Well, I mean, yeah, if Morishige is going to have this late career reinvention, then, I'd prefer him at the base of the midfield, to be honest, than Aoki. I mean, Arthur Silva's got to come back from Brazil at some point. I've got to hold my hand up and actually admit I don't know whether he's actually away at the training camp at the moment, whether he is back in the country or not. I know he wasn't when the Levain Cup final took place, so my leaning is that he probably isn't. But, yeah, I don't know. Aoki, yeah, he just doesn't move the needle for me, really. I mean, he's steady enough, but... again, signing a player from Reds doesn't really excite me either. I agree though that Vini is interesting, and again, if that does free up Morishige, and that is Morishige in midfield is the direction that Hasegawa wants to go, then I'm happy to give that a shot. I initially was opposed, but as you say, in the Levain Cup final, he was imperious. So more power to Masato Morishige. And as far as I can tell, Sam, Jawan Omari hasn't actually left the club, at least in the transfer listings that I've seen. So. He's a possibility to obviously play centre-back while Uvini is settling in as well. Again, you can correct me if I'm wrong, and he has actually left the club, I don't know, but the transfer list that I've seen, he wasn't on it. I guess the biggest move is making Leandro's loan from Kashima permanent. Obviously, 9 league goals, a man-of-the-match displays in the Levain Cup semi-final win over Kawasaki when he scored both goals, and then obviously the final against Kashima when he scored a brilliant opener. But up front, I suppose there are question marks as well, though, aren't they? Because Oliveira is, after his 9 goals last year, he's still sidelined after his injury picked up in the ACL. And I believe that Nagai will miss the start of the season after an operation. Was it on his shoulder? At the end of the season. So it'll probably be left to Adailton to lead the line at the start of the year. But... I don't know. I guess we'll just we'll muddle through until Diego and Nagai are back, and we'll see where we are. But yeah, overall, I guess the transfer dealings are a slight positive, because we haven't really lost too much. And but there is, as I said earlier, it's just a sense of just running it back with no real splash again in the market that I think could have made a major difference.
Yeah, is there an area you'd say is that where you think we really need to improve there? I mean, Taiji Hara is another one that has left. It kind of leaves you maybe a little thin in the attacking positions, as you say, with the 2 injuries. Is that kind of where you'd like to have seen a little bit more investment, or are there other areas of the squad you'd like to see improved?
Well, yeah, I mean, I suppose if Oliveira and Nagai are out, it might give more of an opportunity to Kazuya Konnos, or if there is another young player coming through that hasn't been given too many opportunities yet, we'll wait and see. But yeah, I mean, we've got 3 Brazilian forwards on the books. I mean, I can't really complain about not making a splash signing up front. But I don't know. I know they're all different players, but I mean, we're not going to go out and sign a world class forward. I fully appreciate that, but I don't know. In midfield, I mean, you know that Keigo Higashi's going to play. That's a running joke on here, and obviously with all Tokyo supporters. You just hope that doesn't cost Shuto Abe any game time. And so I don't know. I guess, we're steady in most areas of the pitch, so I can't pinpoint one huge weak point. Although a slightly better left back than Ryoya Ogawa would be good, but as I say, it feels like a middling squad, and you know, we're sixth. We should have won the league 2 years ago, but didn't, and then I just get the feeling that's going to be our one shot under Hasegawa, and I can't see us hitting anywhere near the heights of that again this season.
All right, I'm going to pin you down for a position as well if you're getting me on my table in my head. So where do you have Tokyo kind of realistically? What position do you think you'll finish, and where really should you be aiming for?
I think top four is a realistic aim. Obviously, we've done it 2 years ago, and you could argue that if we didn't have to play every midweek and weekend for 3 months last year, then we might have been able to manage that again. Obviously, we're going to be inconvenienced again this year for the third straight season with the will they or won't they Olympics forcing us to play seven straight away games in July and August. But I would say it looks like sixth is about par for Hasegawa. So sixth, I would... Hopefully, we would finish in the top six again. And, third is probably as high as we could go. But, you know, I'd take that at the moment. I'm not going to be pie in the sky and suggest that we can win the league. But if you're third, then you're there or thereabouts, unless a team like Kawasaki are an absolute juggernaut again. So, top six, I think, is realistic. And, again, in as we've said throughout this episode, the overall quality of the league is slightly on the wane, perhaps. So I think, if you finish sixth last season in such an interrupted campaign, then you could, you could realistically aim for a little bit higher than that.
Yeah, I agree. I think I think a top four finish is probably where you should be aiming for. And I don't see... I think you've got the squad to do that as well. I'm not going to say for certain. I'm not giving away my J-Pred just yet. But, I think that there or thereabouts. And, just going then back to Andrew Smith's question, what sort of style of football can a neutral expect or a new viewer if they tune in for an FC Tokyo game?
Yeah, well, with a full-strength team, a pretty exciting counter-attacking team. Without Nagai's pace in particular, it might be a little bit more laborious. Obviously Leandro capable of the spectacular. A steady team, I guess, in Hasegawa's image. I guess he gets the most out of the cattle he's got to he's got at his disposal. If there was a full slate of games on the slate, I wouldn't necessarily recommend Tokyo as the easiest on the eye. But on our day, I think we are capable of some excellent football, but we're also capable of getting battered by a team that takes the game to us. So it's we're a little bit of a conundrum, but we do tend to muddle through and get a decent enough results to finish high enough in the table. So I don't think this is convincing Andrew especially, but I guess we're lovable in our own way, Sam.
Yeah, I guess so. I've grown to like you a little bit more. Maybe 2 seasons ago, I think Tokyo were a quite laborious team and quite tough to watch. But I think, as Hasegawa's kind of got his feet under the table there, the attacking, the kind of counter-attacking has developed, and on your day, counter-attacking-wise, you're a fantastic watch.
Yeah, and just hoping for, obviously, another year of progress for Shuto Abe, because so excellent last season in his first full season in the team, and hopefully he can kick on and become the real deal for Tokyo in midfield. All right, well... Yeah, so I think, well, we could, can we go back to Thomas Pennington's question, Sam? I think we've pretty much already answered it. You already did right back at the start when we're talking about Kashima. So who can mount a more serious title challenge, Tokyo or Kashima? I think we're both leaning towards Antlers, but they'll probably be both in the mix, in the top six, and how that shakes out at the end of the year is obviously, it's a long way to go.
Yeah, I'm pretty much with that. I think Tokyo, if they have a perfect season, I think they could easily be maybe just about second, maybe. I don't think they're going to necessarily win the league this season, but maybe a perfect season would be second, I think, for Tokyo. But I think Kashima are more likely. I think there's just a little bit more in their squad compared to Tokyo.
Righty-o then. So with FC Tokyo previewed, we're now halfway through the 20 J1 teams as we get you set for the big kickoff of the 2021 Top Flight season at the end of February. I'll tell you what, Sam and Johnny, the second part of Johnny's question, it's probably a little bit too meaty for us to take on at 11:39 p.m. Monday night Japan time. So we might save that for another episode. It's about the teams are swanning down to Okinawa and Miyazaki while the state of emergency is still ongoing. So, the sort of look that is for the J-League, it's not great. But, we might be able to discuss that, I guess, in a little bit more detail in the next episode or two, Sam. So for now, I think we will leave it there. Five previews done and dusted, and with the big thanks to Ryan and all our questioners. I think we've done the business again.
Yeah, I think so. A little bit more positive this time. A little bit, maybe a bit mixed, but yeah, I think these teams in general have a bit to look forward to this season. Yeah, and thanks again to all the Patreon questions. A fantastic number this week, and yeah, hopefully you can keep them coming for our trip to Kanagawa next week and Shimizu.
Yeah, yes, indeed. yes. We'll be talking about our the last two Top Flight champions in next week's episode. As Sam says, we're previewing all of Kanagawa plus Shimizu in Shizuoka. So we'll leave it there. Again, with thanks to Thomas Pennington, Gabriel Anello, Johnny Nickel, Andrew Schmidt, Naoya Kanai, and Ralph, a.k.a. Akakichino 11, not to mention Charlotte Patterson, of course. And Kevin, I do have to apologise, mate. Your question came in while we were recording. I know I did say in my initial Patreon message that we'd be recording on Tuesday night, so your question was in enough time, but unfortunately I had to move the recording forward to Monday night, and I didn't want to spam you with another message with that. So Kevin's question was about Urawa and the loss of Daiki Hashioka, but I think Kevin, once you listen back to the podcast, you will have heard us address that with Ryan, so hopefully that's gone some way towards answering your question. All right, so that is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast, a part two of our J1 season preview series. Sam and I would like to thank our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon. We'd like to thank you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week with, you guessed it, part three of our J1 season preview series. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast. Yosh, 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 yosh.